Thank you. We're joined, as usual, by University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley. Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning, everyone.
Scott McKay is away this week. Instead, we're joined by Patrick Anderson, State House reporter for the Providence Journal. Thank you for joining us, Patrick.
Good morning.
And we're pleased to welcome as our special guest, Kevin Olosanay, executive director of the Rhode Island Democratic Party. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with the recent big controversy involving the Rhode Island Democratic Party. This happened when the party endorsed a former Donald Trump supporter over an incumbent progressive state representative in Providence. After a backlash that attracted national attention, the party withdrew its endorsement. Kevin Olosanay, some Democrats are still very troubled by this episode. Did anyone in the party realize that this was going to emerge as big trouble for the party?
Yeah, well, certainly I did. I mean, I saw the photo that everybody else saw on Saturday after the endorsements were done, and we very quickly realized that there was a problem that we had to fix.
So the question is, if people within the party like yourself realized this was going to be a problem, why did the endorsement initially go to former Trump supporter Michael Earnhardt rather than Representative Maura Walsh?
The endorsement process is a process that happens through the representative district committees, as you know. The challenge here in this particular case was there was not a representative district committee. The statute contemplates that at that point, the chairman can make an endorsement if he determines it's necessary to do so. You know, the unfortunate part of this, I think, for us is that we spent a lot of time since I've been ED and as the chair has been chair of trying to bring the party, the various wings of the party together. And the exercise of this authority gives the impression that we might have been trying to tip the scales in one way or the other when that really wasn't the intention. And so once we figured out that it was an inappropriate exercise of that power, we pulled back. And I think we're taking a look internally at moving forward, when is the right time to exercise that power?
Well, should voting for your party's presidential candidate be a requirement to get the Democratic Party endorsement?
Yeah, you know, I don't know the answer to that question because I think it depends on the circumstance. It depends on the district. You know, for every one of the people who supported Hillary Clinton, we all know people who supported Donald Trump for various reasons. In this particular case, the gentleman we're referring to talked about his business background and how that appealed to him. But, you know, other people have to make their own determinations about where they are at. I think the idea that anybody who voted for Donald Trump is disqualifying, I would say, is something that, you know, individuals have to determine. That's why the representative district committees are in the best place to do that.
Yeah, but I want to just ask you about that. When we look at this controversy sort of in a broader context, it seems to me that the district committees are somewhat ossified. And there's some people are sort of locked in there. And in certain endorsements, for imagine, John Carnevale, for example, there's an old guard there that continues to support these type of candidates. And you get the impression that people are being locked out. They're not being brought into the committees, or they're not being brought into the process the way they should be. And there should be some restructuring or reform. What do you say to that?
I am a huge supporter of representative district committees because it's small-d democracy. It gives average, ordinary folks the ability to put their names on the ballot and run and say, I'm one of the people who can represent this district well and make decisions about who we think our senators and our reps should be. I like that idea in practice. The challenge is demystifying that process because that process has some mystification around it. I mean, even somebody who's as sophisticated as I am, or at least I should be, has a hard time kind of navigating that process. And so we've got some work in the party to make sure that people understand that process. But I would disagree. I think the idea of having those representative district committees, having those Senate district committees make a lot of sense. Those folks run on the ballot every 2 years. They have to make a case to voters about why they should be in that position. And I think that's a good thing. It's good to have that kind of engagement. Again,
so you're just saying that there are not enough people, progressives, for example, that are willing to go through this process and get involved in the committee system.
Or that understand that process, right? I've spent a lot of time working for candidates that have been endorsed and not been endorsed. And I know that when you're working on a campaign, you spend all of your energy and all your time trying to win the race and don't think about the infrastructural pieces on the outside of it. I don't fault anybody who is a first-term legislator for not kind of understanding that that's the way that the system works. And our job is to make sure that they have that information. I will say that with all the controversy that was around some of the endorsements that happened, if people are being honest, they'll tell you they understood the process and they tried to rectify the situation on their own. And what's unfortunate is that the way the system works, the representative committee runs all the way through the end of the year. And so they get an opportunity to do an endorsement prior to an election. And I can see why, if you're an incumbent, you might think that's not fair. But that's the way the process has worked, and it's been that way for a long time.
Well, let's switch gears. Rhode Island candidates filed their second quarter campaign finance reports this week. Governor Raimondo remains the pace setter with almost $4 million in her campaign account, even after spending more than $1.5 million on advertising and other expenses in the last 3 months. Raimondo's opponents are trying to turn her fundraising advantage into a liability by saying she spends too much time on the road harvesting money and is too focused on that. How about that, Kevin Lawson-Noy? Does Governor Raimondo, who's been endorsed by the Democratic Party, is she too focused on fundraising?
Absolutely not. I mean, I think this is a little bit of sour grapes on the part of people who are not running or who are not raising the kind of cash that she is. It's unfortunate that she has to spend the time doing the fundraising. I think if you asked her, she would tell you she'd rather be out talking to voters. But in the post-Citizens United world, where dark money is going to be a part of the way we do business and politics until Congress does something about it, I think, you know, it's unfortunate, but that's the way that it is. The truth is that in order to communicate an effective message and to run the type of campaign I think that she would like to run, reaching out and talking to people on the ground, you have to raise money. That means you have to put camp commercials on TV. That's the way it works.
Maureen, Governor Raimondo has not been able to reach a 50% approval rating in recent history. There are some voters who don't like her and who might think she spends too much time traveling out of state to raise money. How is this going to play as an election issue in the run-up to the primary and perhaps beyond?
Look, money matters most, and she needs the money to run a credible race. However, she is tagged with this idea that was, since she started, that it was big money from out of state, all the stockbroker and things like that. She got labeled with that, and that, for better or worse, that label is going to stick. In other words, she's going to have to deal with that, and I think she's already dealt with it quite well. That and UHIP are the two things that are really going to be a challenge for her for this election. She's rolling out her message very effectively.
And I think it's interesting. You saw Alan Fung jumping on some of Matt Brown's campaign attacks against Raimondo for being a big money corporate candidate. And looks like he might try to take that into the general, which, you know, might seem like a different tact for a Republican candidate. But Kevin, the state party's relationship with the Raimondo campaign has also changed, hasn't it, from earlier? And it looks like you guys are collaborating more than you were, say, 6 months ago. What has changed and how are you collaborating with the Raimondo camp?
I think that we've been working well with her from the very beginning, at least as long as I've been executive director. You know, one of the first conversations I had with the Raimondo campaign was how could we be helpful to make sure that she could be reelected in November. And so we're running a field operation. We've got offices opening up all over the state. We've got field organizers everywhere. We're going to be doing a lot of innovative things and running the type of grassroots campaign that the state hasn't seen in a long time in support of her candidacy, because she's done, I think, what she said she set out to do.
All right, we're out of time, so we need to leave it there. Thanks for joining us, Maureen.
Thank you.
From the Providence Journal, Patrick Anderson.
Thanks, Ian.
And the executive director of the Rhode Island Democratic Party, Kevin Lawson-Noy.
Thanks for having me.
As usual, you can find a lot more on our website at ripr.org.